Tonight's Planning Commission meeting to order. This is Planning Commission meeting for Monday, April 23rd, 2012. Kim, if you would take the roll call, please.
Chairman Lewis.
Here.
Commissioner Demarest.
Here.
Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Rodlin.
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle.
Here.
Thank you. This is a time in our meeting where we take comments from citizens on items that are not on tonight's agenda. So is there anyone in the audience wishing to address the Planning Commission on anything that is not on tonight's agenda? All right. Commissioners, we have two sets of minutes to approve. Our first one is February 13th, 2012. Any comments or corrections tonight?
Hey, Chairman, I might have one. We're on the February 13th meetings, is that correct?
That is correct.
On page 3 of 3, under Roosevelt Road Rezone, the second paragraph there where it says that I made a motion for recommendation, et cetera, and that we suggested the council might want to wait to see what the traffic analysis showed for that intersection of State Route 2 and Roosevelt Road. And as if I recall correctly, and I appreciate everyone's help on this, it seems to me that one of the issues that I raised and that was a part of that motion was waiting on the updated housing inventory analysis as well. And I think I'd like to see that reflected in the meeting, if that's the recollection that the commissioners have.
That is how I remember it also.
And I'd certainly be comfortable with Kim making that insertion after we've had a vote with that noted change.
Great. Commissioners, anything else? And I would entertain a motion to approve with modifications.
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes of February 13, 2012 from the Planning Commission with the one noted change on page 3 of 3 regarding the updated housing inventory analysis.
Second. Motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. All right, our next one is February 27th, 2012. Commissioners, any comments or corrections for these minutes?
Commissioner Sherwood? On page 3, number paragraph D, we just need a clarification of the zoning designation. I think it's both UR9600 and UR6000. Need to make sure that's clear.
In which paragraph, Jeff?
Under section D, first paragraph.
First paragraph.
Second sentence. Where it says UR69600.
Oh.
Okay.
Right.
Any other comments or corrections? Commissioner
Primus, I'd like to add one more comment, more general in nature. I think it would be appropriate that our minutes reflect staff members if they're present for our meeting as well. If they're here and if they're going to participate in the meeting, I think that it would behoove us and make sense to have listed as staff present, just generally speaking.
Commissioners, any other comments? Yeah, then I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes with the correction to page 3.
So moved.
I'll second.
Motion made by Commissioner Christensen, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. All right, tonight we have our three public hearings. And before we get started, I just wanted to make a couple quick comments. Sometimes people are here for the first time, and I just want to let you know who we are. We are the Planning Commission, and we are not the City Council. Sometimes they think we are the City Council. What we do is we make recommendation to Council one way or the other on these items, and then the Council will make the final decision on that. So whatever decisions are made this evening, they're just recommendations, and it will continue from here. I was expecting a much larger crowd in what I was going to recommend, and we've done it before, and I don't see why we couldn't do it tonight, but at some point during each public hearing, I thought about asking for a showing of hands of who is for and against, unless there's any opposition to that by staff or commissioners. I know a lot of people want to have their opinion known, but they don't want to necessarily come up and speak, so if there's no objection to that, I may do that. And so we have a list tonight of names, and we have, I believe, it says here on our first one, which is CPA 2012-01 East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment and Rezone. It says here their presenter is Economic Development Manager, Mr. Sachs, but I believe Manager Popalka, you're going to start this. Is that correct?
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to kick off this meeting with a couple things about the meeting itself and what we're considering for each of these amendments. And then we'll go into the East Monroe, then North Kelsey, and then First Air. For each amendment, I have just a very few, two, three, four slides that shows the basic pictures or maps of the properties under consideration. And following that, with there may be some discussion with the commission, then we can enter into this public hearing for each one. But as the staff and the commission has worked with these all three amendments, this applies to all of them, there are these criteria that we analyze and decide whether or not each amendment meets these in one way or another. I'm not going to go through this whole list, but it basically talks about what effects these amendments might have, what the relationship is to our comprehensive plan, and basically the needs of the city, and that leads to some kind of conclusion usually on each amendment for the commission to recommend to forward this with for approval to the council or denial or some modified recommendation from that. So with that, our first amendment is East Monroe. This is the way this is working, or the way this project is set up. It's on the east side of town, just north of Highway 2, just right as you leave the city, right in the very edge of the city limits. It is currently designated limited open space in our comprehensive plan and zoned also limited open space. The amendment that's being considered tonight involves two things, and actually all three of these amendments involve two different parts. One is some changes in the text of the comp plan, the wording, the narrative, or in some cases golden policies. The other is the land use designation itself. Once the commission makes a recommendation, we go to council for their decision direction on May 1st, which puts it into a 60-day review period prior to final consideration by council in July. In the case of East Monroe, if this moves forward through council, then the rezoning of the property would follow in the next couple of months prior to council's final action in July. The First Air zoning will come later, and North Kelsey does not involve any zoning per se. So with that, a couple of pictures. This is the property. Highway 2 along the south. Got it working. The edge of town is just over here, and this is about 68 acres. It's all now zoned and land use for limited open space. This is what it is today. Before we get to the final version, these are a summary of the critical areas. Again, here's Highway 2. The red and the green, the light green here, are wetland areas. There's a shoreline area along the western part of the site that has been taken out of the application, set aside as limited open space. So this request is for about 50 acres. There's a buildable area here, A, B, C, D, a portion of E that is outside of these critical areas. These lighter bands around these wetlands are buffer areas that are not buildable. And what else? That gives you a basic idea of the property in terms of wetlands and the higher ground that, that is buildable. Just a word about access from Highway 2. DOT plans to build a bypass, has been planning for a number of decades, but does plan to bring it down to this point just east of town. I would say the Brookside Motel is probably about in here somewhere. There will be a roundabout built at that point where the latest bypass intersects with existing Highway 2. From that, this will be expanded, this stretch of highway will be expanded to four lanes. This property is now in, has certain uses that can be built on it. DOT will allow one church and up to four homes that can use an existing entrance, I'll call it a farm entrance, right about in here somewhere, gives access to this property. When they build this bypass, they will, the DOT will move this entrance to the east. We'll move that entrance over to about here somewhere, almost off of our map, and then build a short frontage road to the edge of what is the church property, which is in those western two parcels. The DOT will build that, and that will be the access for the church and up to four homes. If the applicant rezones the property and decides to build, say, a commercial center, and that would trigger other improvements that may include a roundabout at that point that I was just talking about to allow access from to into the rezoned property. That's basically what happens with Highway 2. Access is, DOT has reviewed this, and those are their what conditions or their analysis of this. Yes, it can be done. If the applicants build these improvements. And what the applicant is requesting is to go to general commercial, to redesignate the land use general commercial and the zoning in the same. If the comprehensive plan changes, then by state law, the zoning must be consistent. So one will follow or be done simultaneously with the other. The LOS, the green strip along the western, northwestern area here, is that's within the shoreline management area that will remain in open space. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to pass the presentation to Jeff Sachs.
Great, thank you.
Great.
Commissioners, we're here tonight, as Paul has so well described, to discuss the East Mineral Comprehensive Plan change. In your packets, you'll find a cover sheet. You will find two copies of the land use element. One is a clean version, one is a strikeout version. As you follow through, you'll see the maps, a couple of the colored maps that have been presented tonight. Attachment 5, you'll find findings and conclusions prepared by staff. And again, more maps. The recommended action in front of you tonight can be one of three. You can approve the comp plan amendment as it stands. You can approve the comp plan amendment with changes as recommended in the attachment 5 findings and conclusions, or you can add additional changes to staff recommendations and forward that recommendation to council. And numbers 3 or C, you can deny the application. Pure and simple. The emphasis, if you would look at attachment 5 specifically, findings and conclusions, this document is prepared based on the resolution passed by council 2011/007, and it describes the process for review of a comprehensive plan amendment. If you drop down on page 1, paragraph B, we'll get to the heart of the matter. The paragraph states, "The comprehensive plan amendment is inconsistent with the overall goals and intent of the comprehensive plan as currently described, specifically as related to the following excerpt from the goals of the land use element of the comprehensive plan." I won't read through it all. You've been presented with this document. But in the essence of it is the language of the comprehensive plan is written in such a way as to lead one to believe that the environmental impacts or the natural environment factors of the current environment of the property are such that this property should be in limited open space and it should stay that way in perpetuity. It also indicates that it's zoned agriculture or has an agricultural area to that. That's an inaccuracy in that under state law, there is no such thing as an agricultural area, an agricultural zone, or an agricultural use within an urban setting. It also indicates that this property was brought in under the guise of protecting limited open space when, in fact, its first entrance into the city, when it was in front of your predecessors in 1970, this application was denied by the Planning Commission when the landowner asked to have it annexed into the city with a business classification. The Planning Commission, as I said, denied that application. The council then overruled that decision and brought it into the city and annexed it in 1970. So this property's had a checkered past. It's gone through the ringer, if you will. It has never been developed, and I think that speaks to the property itself and the economics of the property. If you skip past that section, you'll see a bold on page 2 paragraph that takes us to the next step. And when I say the application is inconsistent, that can be overcome. The comprehensive plan is a living document. It can be amended. It can be modified. And based on current situation in our world today, the economics of today, the property right of the property, and just the changing emphasis of the decision makers in the community. The paragraph says, however, due to inaccuracies incorporated in the current text, significant changes in the economy since 2005, and a substantial change in policy direction of the city to support economic development activities of private businesses and landowners, staff recommends the following corrections and changes to the text and policies of the comprehensive plan, which would bring the East Monroe Comprehensive Plan Amendment into consistency with the plan. The changes are detailed below. Now, the changes, the strikeout version is in front of you, and we can go through these changes as you would like. It's up to you whether you'd like me to walk you through each and every change. That's your preference, Mr. Chair. But the essence of the changes are, my goal here was to present you with the full picture. And the picture is, under the current plan, I don't see how this application would be consistent with the text and policies as written. The text and policies can be changed, and what we have presented you with is our changes to the current comprehensive plan that would be can bring the plan into consistency and at the same time rectify any confusion as far as bringing rezoning and redesignating this property from limited open space to general commercial. And then I just did want to also elaborate that due to the reporting criteria for a comprehensive plan amendment, which is 60 days for Commerce to review before Council's final action, we have severed the zoning discussion tonight from this discussion. The zoning decision only has to go to Commerce for 14 days before final action in front of the Council. So that zoning discussion will catch up with you guys here in about a month, and we will take action on that at a future Planning Commission meeting and bring both the zoning and the comprehensive decision to Council in mid-July. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. I have read the revisions myself. I don't feel I need to go through them, but commissioners, I have any preference on whether or not to go through those revisions to the land use element and the comprehensive plan? I have a question, if I'm not hitting anybody. I don't recall seeing those revisions at any earlier time, any workshop or anything, and I'm just curious as to, was there a particular issue that came up that kind of triggered this discussion to change this?
What we did as staff is, believe me, this has triggered a lot of conversations. And we've had a lot of discussion about this very issue. I strongly believe that in the interest of economic development, the current desire of the council is to create a gateway feeling at the three entrances to the city. We have an excellent opportunity here at East Monroe to create a situation where there is commercial property, albeit somewhat impacted and financially questionable as to whether or not it could be developed. However, it would create a gateway entrance into the city to allow people to stop their cars and get out of their cars on the way through Monroe and actually come to Monroe. There's three other areas of town that would actually follow along with a gateway environment, the 522 entrance into the city. We've had conversations with landowners in the southwest corner of the city about creating an entrance zone, and we've called it a gateway zone. It doesn't exist today, but we've kicked it around internally in staff, and there seems to be some support for the concept. The third area would be Highway 2, the western entrance coming easterly into the city, the brick plant, Jack in the Box, that area. The Sockeye building is probably a more appealing version of that entrance than the white brick plant. And so the idea would be to create a zoning or an incentive to clean that area up and make it more appealing as you come into the city of Monroe. So we've had the discussion about specifically the East Monroe proposal. It has been through the ringer for the last 10 or 12 years, most recently with the current property owner. This is its first opportunity for the public process or the due process portion of their application. This is their opportunity to get a vote up or down from the legislative body. And what staff has struggled with through this process is, in the end, all comprehensive land use changes are legislative decisions. They're not, there's no requirement to say yes, there's no requirement to say no. It's strictly based on the opinion of the people sitting up on the bench, and those folks, through policy action, make the decision to approve or to not deny or to modify these applications. What we as staff did during our conversation is to try to give you guys as much flexibility as you possibly could have in the process of making your decision. We've presented you with a solution to approve, and we have presented you with, if you chose not to do anything at all, a no action, we feel that this application should be denied. So those are the internal struggles that we went through, and it's truly my belief that you guys are paid the big bucks to make those decisions.
Thank you.
You bet.
Questions? Any other questions before we pull the testimony? Mr. Norris?
I just had a couple. Mr. Sachs, thank you. If I heard you correctly, first, based on what I read and what I heard you say, the original application as it stands, in your opinion, probably merits a recommendation for disapproval or to not move forward with it.
I would say that the application is inconsistent with the policy text and or the comprehensive plan text and the policies as they currently stand today.
And if they are inconsistent, then it should not be approved. Wouldn't that be a fair conclusion?
That's your conclusion to arrive.
Okay. Thank you. Secondly, the original proposal was limited to a land use change, the designation.
That's correct.
And it seems to me that what we received as planning commissioners Friday evening, it is obviously much broader in scope than the original application. I don't see that there's been any environmental review, including a CEPA checklist done on that. Is that not a necessary thing on a comp plan amendment?
As far as what?
As far as the changes to the land use element, the textual changes.
the textual changes, I believe, fall within everything that we've done up to this point.
Okay. The last concern I have at this point is it just seems, I mean, I spent a fair bit of time over the weekend today reviewing this. I suspect much of the public came in here tonight not knowing about the changes in the proposed land use element, and I just wonder how that fits in the spectrum of the public process and whether, one, we're complying with our requirements under GMA, and two, it's just fair.
As far as compliance under GMA, the council and the planning commission work as one on all planning commission actions or comprehensive plan actions. You act as a single body, if you will, through the public hearing process. Council could have a public hearing. You guys can hold a public hearing. If there's anything outside of the scope of public notice that we've overlooked, that problem should and could be rectified when the council takes action on this comprehensive plan amendment in order not to delay the decision. That publication or the publication of any changes at that point would cover any public notice requirements.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
However, I would point out that it will require a public hearing by the City Council. They will be required to have an additional public hearing due to that notice requirement if additional notice is required.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments?
Commissioner Christensen?
Yeah, I have a question as to the proposed changes to the amendment, to make it so that it would be okay for to proceed with this. I guess my question is that something that would have to be decided before we can make a decision to go ahead or not? Do you understand my question?
Well, I do understand your question. And the decision that you have in front of you tonight is a comprehensive plan amendment. As part of that comprehensive plan amendment, if we were to redesignate this property to the general commercial, as has been requested, that creates inconsistencies within the plan.
Gotcha.
Now, comprehensive plans, by their very nature, certain portions of the plan argue with themselves. The comprehensive plan, by its very nature, is inconsistent. However, an internal consistency, and this sounds terrible, but we strive to make the document work as a whole document. When we go through and change the limited open space language, and we started looking at the limited open space language, as I stated, there are inaccuracies in the textual portion of the comprehensive plan. Since we're having the comprehensive plan amendment at this time, we've opened the comprehensive plan and we're in that legislative process, it would make sense to clarify and to fix any problems that we do see. As originally anticipated, the comprehensive plan had a 5-year update, a 7-year legal update, 10-year update, and an annual docket cycle. And that's a lot of efforts that are going into updating your comprehensive plan. In this case, we're in the annual docket cycle. We have read through the land use element front to back to try to identify anywhere that if you choose to move forward with the general commercial change, anything internally within the land use element is consistent with that change. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend that, yes, you do make all these changes if you choose to go with approval.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you.
You betcha.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions?
Thank you. All right, then I will open up the public hearing and the public testimony portion of this hearing. I have here a list of names of people who have signed up to speak. If your name is not on the list, that is okay. We will allow you to speak when we're all done here. We'll ask if there's anyone else, so don't worry about that. And also, if your name is on the list and you decide for one reason or the other you don't feel like speaking, that's okay too. You can just pass. And the first name on our list is Mr. Lowell Anderson.
Well, after all that, I really don't feel like speaking because it's changed my speech.
And I do, I will mention, I do have a timer this evening.
Oh.
That will help you stay on track. We appreciate if you keep it at 5 minutes. But, sir, also, if you could give us your name and address for the record.
Can I take my hand out so that I'm not on the clock?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Not a problem.
Here, I'll
take this. I'm Lowell Anderson, 129 East Rimont Drive.
And you, and I promise you the testimony you're about to give, the truth, so say I do. I don't know what you should say.
Is
the testimony you're about to give the truth? If so, say I do.
It's the truth as I know it. Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Well, now me, I wanted to go by the Monroe Municipal Code, and I wanted to start with the Chapter 1401, Flood Hazard Area Regulations. And in that it says that the statement of purpose is to ensure that potential buyers are notified that the property is in an area of special flood hazard, and to ensure that those who occupy the areas of special flood hazard assume responsibility for their actions. Now, I realize that we have two flood maps. We have the old one of 99 that says it's in the 500-year floodplain, and also the one that says that it's in the 100-year floodplain and in an AE condition. Now, the little exhibit that I gave you showed the ground profile of what is existing today, and that, let me get my little pointer out here, I cut a section through the property right about through there, and this is the 18 acres of developable property that's that we came before all of this other malarkey. So that, as you can see, it's below the base flood elevation. However, if these people can get this amendment through, it'll go back to the 500-year floodplain. However, we've had four floods in the last 400 or 500-year floods in the last 20 years. 1990, 95, 96, and 2006, and you have the photographs of that as evidence. So my concern is that this property is subject and prone to flooding. And if you want to envision this as a 80 to 100-foot area that has water up to 8 to 10 foot deep, and you want to do all of this development in there, my concern is what happens to the water. Now, the ecology says that not assessing and accounting for the flood water will worsen the flooding on neighboring properties. I don't know, mine's up there somewhere. So to me, that means soil erosion, slope degradation, house sliding off the hill. There's nothing in any of the proposals that says anything about water. Now, I don't see how you can develop this without cutting the water off. In the DPEIS, I see no mention of the railroad. I don't see where the railroad has had anything to say about this. And certainly, with that amount of water, and when you flood, you'll have to take the tracks out, which is no concern of mine. Just don't take the hill out so that I slide back down under it. Now, Mr. Fowlberg has stated publicly that building in the area will have no effect on landslides. But, you know, I disagree with that for the reason stated. If you don't account for and assess where the water is going, it's going to raise it a certain number of feet, and you're going to take that little bank out. And that would make me very, very unhappy. Now then, I wanted to comment on the DPEIS. And I was going to read it, but I'm running out of time, so I'll just say that it was inaccurate based on 1999 information. It's more than 5 years old, doesn't meet state and federal regulations, therefore it's useless and should be redone and revived and resubmitted with a full environmental impact statement. Now, the real contrast between what we have now, limited open space, chapter 13, that's the shoreline, that reduces the property from 68 acres to 50. Chapter 20.05 reduces the acres from 50 to 25. And if we had chapter 14, that would reduce it practically to nothing. Now, you still have the problem that this property lacks the full, all the public services, like water, sewer, and you still haven't got onto the freeway, which is going to cost somebody some big bucks. So when you go ahead and make all these plans, you better provide for the people on the hill also. I'm unalterably opposed to this rezone, and I will fight it as long as I live in the city of Monroe. And thank you for your time, and I'll move on.
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
Questions?
Thank you. Question me?
I just want to build a little postscript here. I'm sorry. It's a common law, no landowner, public or private, has the right to use or use his or her land in a manner that substantially increases flood or erosion damages on adjacent land. That is the law. Thank you.
Next on the list here is Jeff Rogers. Oops. Water back, please.
Yeah.
If you could state your name and address for the record.
Yes. Jeff Rogers. I live at 127 East Redmond Drive in Monroe.
And do you promise the testimony you're about to give is the truth and so say?
I do.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again. We've been here before a number of times, and we'll continue to be here because I suspect this is an issue that's going to drag on a while. So I want to add my voice to the many others that are here tonight opposing the comprehensive plan amendment and the zoning change from limited open space to general commercial for this East Monroe property. There's no question, I think, in anybody's mind that the proposed comprehensive plan amendment and the zoning change from limited open space to general commercial would have profound and irreversible consequences for this site, for the community, and for those of us who live adjacent to this proposed zoning change. And some of those consequences could be devastating. I'll be honest with you, every time it rains for a few days, I kind of wonder when I go to bed at night whether I'm going to wind up at the top of the hill or halfway down. And with this proposal, it's just going to raise that anxiety. The reasons to maintain the limited open space are many in my mind, and there's very few reasons to go through with this change. Clearly, limited open space zoning is appropriate for the property as it is severely impacted by critical areas. It's got about every single critical area that you can have on this particular site. It obviously, as we've said numerous times, lacks the full range of public services and facilities, so it should be zoned limited open space. We've talked about the critical areas before, steep slopes, the risk of erosion and slope degradation and potential slides. There's obviously a stream and there's wetlands, there's wildlife. Lowell, I think, has given you ample evidence that this property isn't a clear flood hazard area. And I think when FEMA provides an updated plan, the last thing the city wants to do is say, yeah, we just finished this whole rezone and we rezone this property general commercial in an area that's going to flood. I think there'd be a lot of red faces. Obviously, I think there's short shrift being given to the access to Highway 2 issues. That's not going to be easy, and I think there's going to be a lot of issues associated with that. We've identified the aesthetics issues, view issues, issues of light, glare, noise, etc. As I've said, limited open space designation is appropriate, in my mind, until a specific project is brought to the city that evidences that there's financial feasibility and that the proposal is thoroughly analyzed. I think all we're dealing with here is speculation, and I don't think we should speculate. I think a specific project should be brought to the city, have a full EIS done so everything can be properly assessed. I haven't heard anything in the 6 years I've lived in this city that presented any compelling need to implement a comprehensive plan amendment and zoning change with respect to this property. I understand the deck is stacked against us. I mean, the current mayor and city council, obviously, in my mind, there's a political favor here being done. And that's been evidenced for 10 or 12 years. So we recognize that, but here's an opportunity to do the right thing. not to pay off a political favor. So we would ask you to deny the application. I think the issue that amazed me, late this afternoon, I just went on the website, because I was there last week, I see this proposed change. Talk about the rug getting pulled out from under your feet. I think there's a fundamental fairness issue with this whole thing. And frankly, I think the right thing to do is to put this back on square one. This last minute change, all these, where nobody's had a chance to look at it, and there's a public hearing tonight, I think is a violation of our of a fundamental fairness. In the remaining seconds, I recognize that the current makeup of the council, this may be their last best chance to fulfill this political favor that I've mentioned. But shame on the city, in my mind, for not engaging the public, the citizens who live on the hill. Not once has anybody come up and said, let's meet as a group, help allay any of your concerns. It's never been done. We live in a wonderful neighborhood in Monroe. They're going to ruin that wonderful neighborhood. There's not a lot of great neighborhoods in Monroe. And so one more down the drain from my perspective. So once again, I would ask you, in my judgment, given the fairness issues, move this thing back to square one. If the city wants to go through with all these last minute changes, I think they ought to go back and line up in the queue again. So thanks for listening, and do the right thing.
Thank you. Next on the list is Barry Monahan.
Good evening. I'm Barry Monahan, 210 Plum Coupling Road.
And you promise the testimony you're about to give is the truth, if so, say I do.
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
I'd just like to go on record to say that I'm totally against this, and I agree with Lowell and Roger that this needs to be, with the change, it needs to be back at square one. That's all I really have to say.
Great, thanks. Clive Eller.
Clive Eller, 21804 Calhoun Road.
And you promise the testimony you're about to give is the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, sir.
I have to start off with saying I want to withdraw my applause to this gentleman. I was so excited to hear your comment that, as written, you should not recommend it. But then, of course, now I understand all the changes and so forth. And I guess all I can say is I'm not really a fan of her, but she said you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. Thank you.
Chad McCammon. You can give us your name and address for the record.
Chad McCammon, 21624 Calhoun Road.
And you promise the testimony you're about to give is the truth? If so, say I do.
I do.
Thank you.
Well, first off, I just want to go on record, too, as saying I did check on the website this morning and was kind of shocked to see some of the documents that I saw. Didn't really have any time to review them, as, you know, I work full-time. I'm a life safety engineer protecting our children and people in high-rise buildings. I'm a fire protection engineer. So that's what I had to do today instead of try to figure out arguments against the proposed changes to the comprehensive plan. But as a homeowner with property adjacent to the proposed rezone and citizen of Monroe, I have concerns about the development of the property. My concerns have been submitted both in these planning meetings. They've been in writing over the past several years. Over this time, I've met with many neighbors. Most seem to share the same concerns. Environmental impacts. In July, we all received a letter stating that there's significance and request for comments on scope of an environmental impact statement, and that an EIS is required. At that time, the letter that we received did not mention anything about a draft, and we were all thinking they were going to do a full EIS. It's after the comment period that we find out that they're going to do a draft. It's just, once again, things getting pulled right out from under us without time to comment on whether that's fair or not. But after we received the draft version, it didn't really address what would be the cumulative effects of the property if something were built on it, which is what really needs to be addressed. And the final draft of the EIS was actually posted today with no time really to review that either. And I didn't really see much changed in it other than they did add comments to the end of it. And a lot of our letters just had comments that, like on the EIS thing, that the WAC allows a phased version to be done per WAC 197.11.065. And when I look in that section, CI allows a phased review, it references section 197.11.443.2, which states a non-project proposal may be approved based on an EIS assessing its broad impacts. This statement that we received does not go over the broad impacts. It goes over no impacts. It doesn't address any of the concerns. And then under what's not allowed to be phased is in section WAC 197.11.065.D2 states a phased review is not allowed when it would merely divide a larger system into exempted fragments or avoid discussion of cumulative effects and impacts, which is what I fear would happen to this property. They may build one little piece on A and then a piece on B and a piece on C, and no one may review the entire document as a whole and what impacts it has. After the draft version was received, I spent a Sunday afternoon walking the neighborhood, and I don't know if you've seen or not, but I submitted comments or a list of signatures of people that wanted to see a full EIS done. I talked to about 94 people that day. I had 92 signatures. One person just didn't want to talk about it, and one person didn't agree out of that many. You know, a 1% fail rate on people that don't agree that it needs an EIS, I think we're really kind of missing the boat here. Flooding, Lowell has pretty much went over all of that. I've taken pictures, seen it underwater many times. We don't want to end up on the news. King 5 investigations of, you know, why did this new commercial property end up way underwater? That's just not how Monroe wants to be portrayed. In fire protection engineering, I know we go minimum to code. We go above code in many cases, and we use the best available science. The best available science here is that it's below the flood elevation, whether it's in an adopted plan or not. Landslide potentials, we all are at risk there. A few weekends ago, I heard some water at the bottom of my property, so I hiked down the hill to find a pretty small stream running out of the hill on my property. And I know that there are several other springs on the hill as well. And then how does this really benefit the city? Urban sprawl, do we want to look like Gold Bar and Salton? This past summer, I went camping with my children several times. I took each child on their own trip. And on the way home, it took an hour to get from Skykomish to Monroe. Do we want to make it an hour and 20 minutes? It's the definition of urban sprawl. And the city already has plenty of commercial land, so why do we want more to compete and devalue the land that already exists? Anyway, it goes on and on and on here about how there's other sections of the comprehensive plan that you did not address in your changes about land use and natural environment, et cetera, that this would still not be in compliance with. So I'll end with that, even though I had a page left to go, but I appreciate everybody's time to listen to what I had to say, and thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Tim Johnson, is all I have here. Tim Johnson, good to see you. All right. And last on the list is Brett Olson.
I'm Brett Olson, and I work with Wallace Properties Commercial Real Estate in Bellevue.
If you could give us your name and your address for the record.
Okay, 111 Lake Avenue West, Kirkland, Washington.
Great, and if you may, do you promise the testimony you're about to give the truth of so say I do?
I do.
Thank you, sir.
I am here on behalf of the applicant to read a letter from him, Joshua Free, from East Monroe Economic Development Group, and I will hand the letter and to submit it to you as well. I will be limited in my ability to answer any questions, simply just reading this letter, because you couldn't be here tonight.
And that's fine. We may limit that to just planning commissioners anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. I am unable to join you tonight, but appreciate your willingness to have my representative read the statement. I speak on behalf of East Monroe Economic Development Group. We want to urge your support of the comprehensive plan amendment and the accompanying rezone for the Highway 2 property in East Monroe. We believe this property is an excellent location for commercial development, and we believe we can bring much-needed economic stimulus to the city of Monroe by developing this site. The exact revenue numbers for the city will depend upon which tenants eventually come to the developed property. But as an example, I have been involved in developments in other cities where the revenues could approach, he's going to go through several numbers here, $6,500,000 sales tax on construction-related work over 3 years, $2 million in city application review, inspection, building permits, and GFC charges over the 2 years, $1.5 million per year in additional annual property tax revenue upon completion, $2 million per year in new retail sales revenue, 300 new full-time and part-time jobs, $15 million in annual wages to the employment market. Of course, we have heard the objections raised by a few of our neighbors overlooking the site. While we understand their desire to keep their view untouched, it simply isn't reasonable to expect the property owner should not be allowed to develop their own property to its best and most logical use because a neighbor wants to retain their view. Let me take a few moments to address the issues that have been raised. First, wetlands are sensitive areas. While there are some sensitive areas on the subject property, they simply are not legitimate reasons to deny approval. Here's why. Some of the neighbors have expressed concern about building on or developing steep slopes. The fact is that almost all of the steep slopes near the site are on the neighbor's land. Someone else has built on the steep slopes, not us. We have no plans to develop on or near steep slopes. In fact, most of these steep slopes are separated from any developable land by hundreds of feet of buffers. Wetlands. Most of the wetlands on the site have already been identified and buffers have been established. We have state laws and Monroe City codes in place that will protect these sensitive areas. In fact, they have already been exempted from the proposal. No wetlands are in danger of being paved over. Seasonal flooding. There are a couple of low-lying areas on the end of one of the parcels. These areas have flooded during major events. There are pretty simple ways to address that issue. The Army Corps of Engineers has a process that allows safe development to occur while still maintaining sufficient space on site to store floodwaters during major events. This is a manageable problem and should not prevent approval of our request. Access from Highway 2. Ingress and egress from this property is governed by the State Department of Transportation. There's simply no way to know exactly what DOT will require until they see a specific project proposal. However, here are two important things to remember as it relates to access issues. This is a major state highway. There are always access issues to address. This is not unusual. Traffic mitigation of some kind is to be expected. Any and all traffic mitigation will be the responsibility of the developer. The city will have no financial burden or responsibility. DOT will determine the requirements, and the developer will make the necessary changes. Finally, I understand the staff has encountered some minor problems regarding elements of the comprehensive plan. As someone who presently serves on the Bothell City Council, I am familiar with the need to occasionally tweak the comp plan. If certain elements of the plan are inaccurate or obsolete, this is a good time to address those while this project is being approved. It certainly is no reason to delay or deny this proposal. Any planning commission or city council will find itself facing such issues from time to time. Simply identify the inaccuracies or obsolete language and make the changes. Cities grow. Needs change. This is a necessary and normal part of the job when you serve on a local planning commission. Let me close by saying we believe development of the site can be of great benefit to the people of Monroe. Smart, successful commercial development brings vitality to a region. It brings jobs to the people and revenue to the city. Monroe needs both. Please vote to approve this application. Sincerely, Joshua Freed. Thank you.
All right, I have one more name on the list here, Chuck Strunk.
I I'm Chuck Stewart. I live on 21810 Calhoun Road. And yes, the testimony I'm going to give is true.
Great, thank you, sir.
I'm here to give a little historical perspective and to respond to the gentleman that just read the letter. I've lived in Monroe and practiced medicine here for 41 and a half years and lived in the same house overlooking the property that's in question. I also grew up on a dairy farm, and in addition, as I said, practicing medicine for 41 years, I think I'm qualified to recognize BS when I hear it. I just heard some. To give you a little historical perspective, during the time we've lived here, we've seen that area that's in question flooded. And I'm not talking about a little standing water. I'm talking flooded at least three times, and a fourth time that maybe wasn't quite as severe. You can classify this any way you wish, but the water's going to come again sometime. Who knows when? And if they do anything to mitigate it by building ponds or lifting up the area that they're going to build on, the water's going to come, and if it doesn't go there, it's going to go somewhere else, and it's going to impact someone else. We know a couple other things. We know that that bluff is not real stable, because we have seen over the 40 years at least two of our neighbors lose a good portion of their bluff. And we've also seen the eastern part of Calhoun Road get washed out, and it's not been reinstituted because it's not stable. We also know that the bypass has been proposed before we even came here. I'll believe it when I see it. I suspect I'll be in the ground before it happens. So you know that most of the customers that are going to be coming to this commercial enterprise, whatever it is, are going to be coming from the west. They're not going to be coming from the east, because that's where the population center is. So they're going to have to make a left turn to get into there. Do you have any idea what it's like to make a left turn off of Highway 2 if there's not a signal light with a turn arrow? Just think about that for a moment. The other thing is, I heard someone say something about this was going to be a gateway into Monroe. Well, the people that come to Monroe, very few of them come from the east. They're coming from Highway 522 or from West Highway 2. So that's the gateway that most people are going to see. The ones that are coming from the east are returning from skiing or from being in eastern Washington or something. And so they're not going to be very concerned about a gateway. They're going to be concerned about getting back home and fighting the traffic, which we have been able to see grow and grow and grow over the past 40 years. So basically what I'm saying is, you can talk about all the environmental impact studies you want to do and about how this is going to promote more money for the city of Monroe. But when you get right down to it, this is a pretty silly project, pretty silly idea. And it's just based on things that we already know. We don't have to do any speculation. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that did not get their name on the list that would like to speak? Sir? And hold on. One ahead of you. If you could give us your name and address for the record.
Doug Hamer, 21122 Calvin Road.
And do you promise the testimony you're about to give is the truth? So,
I do.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I didn't look at the website this morning, so I was a little bit taken aback by all this. But one thing I just wanted to—I thought I kind of already given most of what I wanted to say in the submissions. But from what I understood, said by Mr. Philberg, we have to amend the comprehensive plan to make this project makes sense. And the reason we need to amend the comprehensive plan outside of that is one little technicality about this language about agricultural land. Well, it seems to me that would be fairly easy to fix. I mean, changing that language, that doesn't change the suitability of the property for this particular purpose. I believe in smart development of commercial stuff too. I think it's deemed for the city of Monroe, but this is not it. This is going to, as a gateway, again, it doesn't make sense to get a gateway. if you put commercial property out there, it's just going to draw business away from Monroe, where it needs to be. I mean, there's not enough happening in Monroe right now. And anyway, I think that's what I had to say. But I'd have a lot more to say if I'd had more time to think about it. So maybe moving it back a stretch and some more time to look at this thing would be a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Sir, do you want to speak?
Oh, sure.
Just need your name and address for the record.
My name's Rod Nissen. I live at 12425 175th Avenue Southeast.
And do you promise the testimony you're about to give is the truth? If so, say I do.
Yeah, I do. I just did a little bit reviewing about what the meeting is about. I think it's mainly about the zoning to lower the square footage, correct?
It's, staff, you want to address that, please?
The application is basically about changing the comprehensive plan. Right now, it's designated as limited open space, that the entire parcel. And the applicant wants to change that to general commercial, which would allow this to be rezoned to general commercial. And the buildable area is about 18 acres in that dark green ABC. That's where any potential development would take place. Does that help you?
It's about the airport?
No, that's coming up later.
That's okay. That's be another. I got the notice on that too. But I just got, as I said, on the subject of the zoning for smaller lots. What this fellow was talking about? You're a builder.
I'm not. No.
Oh, well, anyhow, it seemed like what you were saying made sense about building in the area. I think that we're always going to have wetlands, and if I know all the fees and everything to build and to fill in on wetlands, it takes a lot of work, a lot of field dirt, and they can bring in with enough trucks. If somebody's got the money, they can fill in a wetland and they can build on it, and they can make it stable. And I'm in favor of it because I don't like mosquitoes. I really don't. As far as I'm concerned, the wetlands around where I live, they just hide mosquitoes. They aren't big wetlands. There isn't any big wetland to protect. So in my opinion, I'm just very strongly in favor of the smaller zonings, of being able to, flexibility and to be able to build. It's really not view property up there. If the argument is against building, I'm in favor of building. I think I'm very strong in favor of the flexibility to be able to build up there. If they're not, because they have to pass whatever city council approves, they've got to go. They have to follow whatever those rules are. So it shouldn't hurt anybody else's property value if to allow flexibility for building up in that area. So that's all that I have to say. All right. So I think that.
Great, thank you, sir. Okay. Is there anyone that has not had a chance to speak yet this evening that would like to do so on this particular item?
I'd like another comment, if you would.
Actually, we only allow just one at a time. But thank you, sir. One for hearing. If not, I would entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodland. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Commissioners, any discussion? The public hearing is not yet closed, so there isn't opportunity yet for a motion, but there is for discussion.
Now, I'd like to make a statement, and it's probably not going to come over very popular, but I've done a lot of soul searching over this whole issue. I've asked myself, as a property owner in the city of Monroe, how I would like to have somebody tell me how to use my property, or what to put on my property, or what to do with my property. And I know, as a property owner of acreage, that I would not like somebody to come in there and say, do this, can't do that, can't develop this, can't develop that. What I would like to see is if that property that we're talking about at East Monroe is developable, if there's 13, 12, 10 acres that's available for development, that that property owner be able to go ahead and do what they want to do with that property based on all of the rules that the city has set up for development of that property. There's going to be a lot of expense for that person to go through to develop that property. But that's their choice. You know, that's the freedom that we have in the United States of America, is to make a choice. This company made an investment in that property, and we're saying you can't do with that property what you want to do with that property? No. So the way I feel today as a property owner, I have to go with the saying that to move forward with this property.
Commissioners, anyone else? I will, if no one else wants to, I'll jump in. While I generally am one to want to lead property owners to do what they would like to do with their properties, this existing property was purchased under, I believe, was purchased under this existing condition and is allowed to be developed on. Maybe not to the level that they would like, but it is allowed to be developed down to a degree. And while I, again, do support usually letting people develop however they want, if there is the potential for significant impact, then that raises a red flag with me. So I believe there is potential. I know there's been argument against it, but I believe there is a lot of potential for negative impact on the neighboring properties to a degree that I'm not real comfortable with. I learned through this more detailed process that there is a dike, and this is not a dike, there's a culvert, two of them actually, entering this property, and so restraining that river, I believe, is nearly impossible. And as far as trying to change the language of the comprehensive plan, this was the first time I saw this, as I believe anybody saw it, and it felt a little, I was taken back by it, quite frankly. You know, there's a book I like to read that says avoid even the appearance of evil. And I'm not saying there's impropriety here, but I say that it allows the opportunity to be accused of impropriety, I think. And it doesn't sit well with me, as I read it this weekend. So anyway, that's where I'm at. I have to say I oppose any changes to this property. So. Commissioners?
Wait a minute,
Mr. Rahman.
Yeah, I've been writing notes here all through the late evening and before. This property can be developed as zoned just right now, but I'm looking at the needs of the city. We have a commercial property right now, it's empty. We have empty buildings in the commercial areas that are not being used. Do we really need more commercial property at this time? I don't think so. If this was to be, I think I said this years ago, if this property could be used as ball fields, it could be flooded but still be used later, I would go along with it. But as it is right now, I don't think we should go along with it.
Sure, I'll jump in, and if you'll bear with me, I've got a few comments, and I also have a few questions, and I'd like to just kind of work through the staff report and cover package kind of from top to bottom, if I may. Mr. Sachs has presented us with a bit of a history lesson here this evening. I wasn't here in 1970 when this property was annexed. I haven't read the annexation application, but the proposed language says included a request for commercial zoning of some sort. I do know that nothing happened with that when it got annexed, apparently. It, I think, came in as some sort of residential type zoning. I don't know that for sure. As far as I know, nothing happened with this property the rest of the 70s. Nothing happened with it during the 1980s. 1993, City of Monroe adopted their first comprehensive plan and said residential type, low impact. Not a high use there. It's not suitable for anything else, again, as I know, as I recall. I was here at that time. 1998, there was an update done by a comprehensive plan at the time that the limited open space was adopted, with the only being, as Mr. Sachs has referred to, that it really wasn't suitable property for an entire type of development. Now, I think, Mr. Sachs, you've raised some valid concerns with the language that's in the text, without question. A comprehensive plan and its elements deserve to be looked at, revisited, tweaked perhaps, and updated to reflect changes. The comprehensive planning process is something the state legislature has imposed upon us, good and bad, perhaps. But bottom line, I think it not only one obligates us as a city to do certain things, but also provides us as a city, and when I say the city, I mean the residents as well, the opportunity to look at where they want their city to go. Call it a visioning process. And we do that through a comprehensive planning process, whether it be a sub-area, which just affects a part of town, or a more general type aspect, as in land use, transportation, sensitive areas, etc. It provides us that public process that gives us our comprehensive plan. Numerous attempts have been brought forward to try to change this property. Some have not gone very far. Some have gone further than others. This is, as Mr. Sachs, you said, probably the greatest shaking out or opportunity for this property and its ideas to be discussed. And I agree. That's
the first time. The first time.
The first time. And that's fair. I completely have no problem with that whatsoever. It's part of the process. I'm not sure that I'm willing to accept, though, that the comprehensive planning language we've had was wrong. I think that perhaps past planners, past city administrators we've had since this property came to city might differ with that. However, they're not here tonight to comment on that. And it really is the gist of the discussion. Looking at the future vision and issues, the proposed text the staff has brought forward to us tonight talks about the roundabout. We saw the picture up there a few minutes ago showing what the state plans for that right of way where it intersects with the existing Highway 2. And while some in the audience have said they don't believe that right of way will ever get built, I'd like to think that it will. I think this city needs that right of way to be built. I think we probably all agree with that. And I know there are some out there that will say that it's going to be built more than likely. I don't know. But the future vision and issues section, as it's proposed, doesn't talk at all about the second right-of-way or roundabout that would be required for this property. And I think that's a glaring omission. How can we talk about the future vision of this property and not talk at all about that roundabout when it's been made pretty clear to us through the state Department of Transportation that that roundabout would be required for this property to develop in any other way than what's allowed to develop right now? To me, it's a key part of that. And it needs to be addressed.
If I could clarify on that.
Please, please.
We don't have that in writing. It's not part of a highway plan. It was a conversation that took place between Paul Pelka and WashDOT. While that's currently the plan, we don't know if that will be the plan. Hence, you cannot put inaccurate information into the comp plan that's going to last for many, many years.
I agree with the inaccurate part, but I've read the letter from DOT that says that they will require a roundabout for any further development of this property.
As of today.
And that letter is on our website under this project.
Very good.
Very good. Excuse me.
Thank you for the correction.
You're welcome. So, my comment on the roundabout stands. I'm confused when I read the text when it talks about the gateway. I've heard discussions of a gateway, west, south, and now east. To me, we heard some concerns in the testimony that the gateway may not be very appropriate out here. And in my mind, this would be an isolated gateway. It would be separate from the town of Monroe.
Right.
Sure, people coming from the east could pull into this area of commercial development. They'd pull back out and probably continue on past Monroe. To me, a gateway is part of inviting the public into the city. I don't see how that this does that. Furthermore, the text and nowhere else in our comp plan defines what the gateway vision is for the city of Monroe. How can we have a gateway vision, and that language is specifically used in the text, without a vision that's been defined? And I think we're lacking there, and we would need to address that as well before we move forward with any text amendments of this sort. Mr. Sachs, can you provide any further enlightenment on the gateway vision?
The gateway vision is a designation we have been working on as staff to create, as I've elaborated already, an opportunity to create a zone where you enter the city of Monroe that is a high quality and attracts people to get out of their vehicle and stop in the city of Monroe. That is the intention of the gateway zone.
Thank you. Shouldn't that then be set forth in the comprehensive plan? And isn't this a perfect opportunity to do that if we're going to call for it in the language?
We discussed the idea of putting through a gateway zone. There is no way an opportunity to develop and get a gateway zone put together. The applicant has no desire to implement a gateway zone on this property. And so when we're talking about a gateway vision, it's not so much as a designation, a use, or a zone. It's a discussion of what we would like it to. It's not specifically designating a zone. It's not specifically talking about a use, and it's not specifically talking about any planning application at this time.
Okay, then I think it seems that it would make sense for us to back down on the gateway vision as being a key component of this language.
Mr. Demarest, do you have a motion to amend the language? We don't have a motion on the floor. Typically, the correct approach is for the Planning Commission to make a motion and then to start taking action on the document, whether it's whatever your motion is, and to amend that motion that's on the floor. To have a rhetorical conversation about something that's not on the floor during a public hearing, I think, is inappropriate.
Okay. Another concern that I have here with regard to the scope of this is that we are changing the definition of general commercial, proposing to change the definition of commercial, general commercial. Staff is proposing that some of the uses allowed in general commercial be taken out. And that, in my mind, is just one more reason why we wouldn't act on this so quickly, but would rather go back and visit this text in more depth.
And in that case, the many warehouses that was struck from the general commercial language, there's an inconsistency between the zoning code, which does not allow for many warehouses. We just brought this as an opportunity while the comprehensive plan is in front of you to create consistency between the zoning code and the comprehensive plan. It has created a great deal of confusion as to what might be allowed in a commercial zone, and there's been a lot of public discussion about whether or not many warehouses would be allowed on this site. With the consistency for many warehouses, a landowner could make the case that the comprehensive plan anticipates and informs the zoning code to allow for many warehouses. That inconsistency creates legal liability for the city, of course. We chose to fix the problem.
Okay. Thank you. You state that the proposed amendment is compatible with neighboring land uses. As I see it, the neighboring land uses are limited open space or agricultural. Can you elaborate on the compatibility?
Limited open space is the current designation. We're leaving limited open space in certain cases due to the critical nature of that. I think in building vernacular, typically, if in a residential development, this would be a 999 track. It would be a critical area. That would be designated on the plat. It would probably be more appropriate to designate the entire site general commercial, and then through a critical area site plan at project level to designate those areas as critical areas. Now, in this case, the applicant has chose to cut it in half and leave certain areas limited open space and general commercial. We also have residential, urban residential, as a neighboring use. Outside of the urban growth area, of course, we're going to have rural application and incompatible uses. There's not a single urban growth area in Snohomish County that has compatible use between urban and rural. It's a struggle that I think all cities have had during the planning process.
So then if I take the unincorporated areas out of the question, how is this compatible with the land of the north?
The way I see it is there's substantial visual separation, there's substantial horizontal separation as well as vertical separation from the residential neighborhoods. The property itself faces probably the most urban of all urban construction, and that's a state highway. It is a critical aspect. It's something that all commercial developers are looking for, and that's cars driving by. It's highly compatible with the highway environment, and the commercial nature of that at that location is very, very good for the commercial use.
And I can appreciate the highway benefit there, with the exception perhaps of the access, ingress and egress challenges.
Again, that's a project issue that the eventual developer will have to tackle, and at substantial expense, and I'm sure there will be a substantial analysis involved. State agencies of many flavors will weigh in on access to the state highway.
That's the bulk of my questions. Going back to what I started out with, this is a comprehensive planning process, as I understand it. It is the time and the opportunity for rhetorical questions, perhaps. It's also the time for an exchange, now that we've closed the public testimony, between commissioners, for an exchange between commissioners and staff, as the case may be. I can appreciate your concerns, my approach, and in your mind, it's wrong. I feel comfortable in doing it, and I'm sitting up here, and you're not.
True story.
So with that, I will hold comments at this point and yield the floor to anyone else.
Thank you. One thing I did want to say, I realized I did something, and I have to apologize to the audience. I stated I was going to have a showing of hands before closing the public testimony portion of this hearing, and I forgot to do that. And it is closed, and I suspect that is why the applause comes forward, because you do want your opinions known, even though you didn't come to the mic. I would respectfully ask that you not that you refrain from applause. I think we kind of have a good feel for where the temperament of the audience is as far as this proposal is concerned. So thank you for that. Commissioners, any other? Commissioner Sherwood.
Yeah, we're looking out right now to almost 2040. I moved here in 1990, 22 years ago, which is about the span of the comprehensive plan of 25 years, I believe, give or take. And I've seen, as I discussed with Commissioner Rodland, looking at the aerial map over here, the extent of changes that have occurred in this city in that period of time. It's very difficult for us to look that far forward, but we can see that there's been a tremendous amount of activity has occurred within the city limits of Monroe in the past 20, 25 years. I think it would be myopic if we're projecting the population to be roughly 10,000 citizens more within that period to think that the existing infrastructure, whether we look at it from an industrial, residential, commercial standpoint, is going to hold up. Because we had one small industrial park and we thought that was going to hold up, and it turns out we needed another one that was even larger. So I want to make sure that we don't get too narrow-sighted here in how we approach this. If we put Walmart in, if the medical office building comes, for instance, and these are things that may happen in the next couple of years, then all of a sudden the supply of commercially zoned land that's amenable to a significantly sized development gets close to zero. And so if someone comes to town and says, we want to put in a significant commercial development in Monroe because we like the fact that there's three state highways coalescing here, and this is the epicenter, we have to say, well, we're sorry, but we can't help you. And I have to say, and I'll just say it boldly, I agree with the philosophy of where the city of Monroe is going right now, to encourage development rather than stifle it. Now I want to move on to, do I have a time limit?
Do you have time limit?
Just tell me when I'm done, okay?
Nobody's ever given me that option before.
I look at the physical aspects of this.
We're good.
Okay. I look at the physical aspects of this property, and there's been a tremendous amount of disinformation put forth every time this project has been brought up and spoken about within the public setting. And I want to interject right there. Nothing here is done in secret or in a vacuum. If we decide to go forward with these changes in the language, this is going to be subjected to an enormous amount of public scrutiny as the city council takes this matter up. So I personally resent the fact that anybody thinks that I have gone behind closed doors and me or any of the other commissioners and made deals. That is really, really disrespectful. Okay? Now, getting to the physical aspects of this property has been subject to an enormous taking without just compensation. And in that regard, I agree completely with Commissioner Christensen. How can we sit here and tell people who have utilitarian properties, you can't do anything with your property because we're going to chop it up, we're going to sever it, we're going to take it, we're going to condemn it, and we're not going to give you a dime. That is flat on American right there. The wetlands and the shoreline designated areas have 200-foot setbacks. If you want to go outside and walk off 200 feet, that is absolute junk science standing behind that. Now, I have the figures here that the Heritage Baptist property, 42.81 acres, 13.83 of that is surveyed as usable land. That's 32.3%. The government, which is insatiable, will keep taking and taking and taking. And that's what we're doing right now. And one of the gentlemen who spoke said, take it all. And that is un-American and inappropriate. Right now, you can build four houses and a church on there. I have seen no documentation that tells me how large this church could be. If it's a 50,000 square foot church and we have 5,000 square feet of impermeable area in the four houses, we now have probably 5 acres of impermeable surface on this 15 or so acres of usable area. The way it is right now, without anybody doing anything except exercising the property rights they've been granted to date. Okay? I doubt that a commercial development that will take place on this property is going to result in a greater extent of impermeable area than what is already allowed. The benefit of allowing a commercial development is the fact that the public, you and me, all of us, get a chance to have more of a say-so and more of a direction in how that property is developed. Okay? And I endorse that concept, that we would have more of a say in what goes here. And one of the gentlemen who spoke very wisely, I think, and said, you know, we need to have some idea of what's going to go in here. And I think we all understand it's not going to be line retail. I spoke this in an earlier meeting. It's going to be some sort of a destination facility that will make sense in that context, in that environment. Okay? And so all of this disinformation about wetlands, shoreline areas, steep slopes, and flooding, I think, you know, needs to be corrected. And certainly, any project that goes forward is going to be subjected to an intense amount of scrutiny so that all of those issues will be addressed in spades. hopefully to everybody's satisfaction. I am in favor of approving this with the language, understanding that a lot of this will see further scrutiny as it goes through the council. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you. Commissioner Tom.
Thank you. I have a whole page of sentences and notes, but they basically echo everything that Commissioner Sherwood just said, and I do agree with Commissioner Christensen as well. And there are a few reasons. I've spent time with a lot of the people who are against this project, and I've spent a lot of time in all the paperwork and in all the plans and talking to people, and I've looked inside out and backward to try to make sure that for me there's no impropriety going on. And I do also take issue with some of the accusations that have been made, and it's hard to sit and listen to those things without being able to answer for them. But one thing that especially has stuck with me tonight is a lot of the talk about fairness, and fundamental fairness was a term that was brought up. And I just want to say that if I was making a recommendation based on some public property that we're talking about turning a park into a commercial development or doing something that actually belonged to the city, I would probably be looking at things a little differently, but we're not. I do believe in private property, and I don't think it's fundamentally fair to allow a group of people to come and say what they want or what they don't want with someone else's property. So a lot of the arguments are project level, and those concerns have been satisfied to me. I know that those things will have to be addressed when there is a project that comes up, if there is a project that comes up. There may or may not be at this point. So I too am leaning towards the recommending a forward motion with this, just so it can keep going through its process. And I, as everyone else here, has looked at the verbiage that's being changed, and I do have a question. How did inaccurate language make its way into the comp plan in the first place? Why wasn't it corrected before? Who put those inaccuracies in there? And would these changes need to be made whether or not there was an application on the table?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked it. The language was brought into the comprehensive plan through this planning commission and through the city council. It was fully adopted by those two bodies. It was drafted by staff. And as I started my comments tonight, I talked about legislative decisions, pure and simple. All comprehensive plan amendments are legislative decisions, hence political decisions. This has been a political process since it was first applied for. I've heard all sorts of stories about this property over the years. I don't think I'll go into them because I can't prove them as fact. But there's been politics rife within this process since 1970. And anybody that wants to sit down and talk to all the folks involved, including the city council members and planning commissioners that have lived on Calhoun Road over the years, perhaps they should. Now, the inaccuracies. Under state law, and that's why I've included paragraph C on page 5 of attachment 5, there's 14 goals under GMA. Urban growth, reduce sprawl, transportation, housing, economic development, private property rights, permits, natural resource industries, the environment, open space and recreation, citizen participation and coordination, public facilities and services, historic preservation, and the Shoreline Management Act, and those goals entail delineated within it. All goals must be considered during this process. No goal needs to have a priority. In fact, state law specifically states no goal can have a priority. Now, when the comprehensive plan was adopted with the current language, that body that adopted that language chose to weigh certain goals under GMA higher. Right now, we're recommending, under the current circumstances, that you evaluate this project based on other goals to have higher priority. Specifically, the language that really troubles me in the vision has to do with mitigation for displayed wetlands could, in turn, eliminate much of the remaining buildable portions of the area. When I read that statement, it's very subjective. Could. Mitigations for displaced wetlands. We don't know what those wetlands are going to be. Yet, inserted into the comprehensive plan language, you have very clearly language that's highly subjective, yet can be supported by one of the goals under GMA. I think that would probably fall under the environment, or perhaps goal 14, shoreline management. However, shorelines weren't part of this conversation when this comprehensive plan was developed. The language that's embodied in the comprehensive plan and the language where there are inaccuracies, it just troubles me. As a staff member who read through the document and struggled with trying to come up with a recommendation for this, as I went through the goals, I didn't find a single goal that would clearly suggest to me that this property cannot be developed. And primary within this is we've had a property owner who has struggled for going on 12 years. He's made three separate applications to the city, and at each time, staff and the Planning Commission have successfully denied his opportunity for due process under this very comprehensive plan. They have not even allowed it to come to the City Council for a vote. I was called a pig earlier tonight, I think. I think there was some reference to evil and evil doing. There's none of that going on here. Paul and I sat in a room and we discussed this at great length. And one of the reasons I'm sitting here tonight and giving this presentation is because I truly believe that property rights in this case, and very much so in this case, have been trampled on for 12 years by this city. And to go along with the property rights, there's been a tremendous disparagement of one family, the Minnick family, and their church. And that hurts. That hurts me as a person, it hurts me as a staff member. And I don't think things should get personal. My recommendation here today, tonight, as you read this, there was no recommendation. Did you hear me recommend approval or denial? That's the appropriate function for staff, is to give you guys the facts and allow you to move forward with them. Again, Commissioner Tuttle, I appreciate, and I didn't mean to quite get up on my soapbox, but the language on page 4, when we talk about how does property get into a limited open space, if you read the language prior to the strikeouts, basically, it's a punitive determination that puts property into an open space without the desires of the landowner being involved. In other words, it's a top-down government action. And the way we've rewritten this is if a landowner chooses to have his property put into open space, now we have a zoning classification and a land use designation that allows for a property owner to seek that. At the same time through that process, can go through the assessment process with the county assessor to have their taxes adjusted. It's a different way of looking at things. I look at the second recommendation that amends the language inside the comprehensive plan as a way to support economic growth in the city, protect private property rights, and again, we're not looking at today's economic environment. As the city's representative, I am the one that tracks the land use sales, the real estate transactions in this town. And while at North Kelsey we have 47 acres of commercial property for sale, out of that, there's 6 that's actually listed for sale right now that's not pending. I've had discussions with people in the past that say this proposal has been denied in the past, because the city owns 47 acres of property and we need to sell the citizens' property before we can bring more commercial property onto the record. So yes, there are errors, there are inaccuracies, and in my opinion, there are some very thought-out changes to the language that takes the comprehensive plan from a document that emphasizes goals such as the natural environment and open space and emphasizes other goals of GMA, economic development, property rights, jobs, commerce. So thank you for the question. I hope I answered it.
You did. Thank you. So I have another question about the whole EIS process, and I know, Brad, you're probably tired of talking about it. I've been in your office more than once, as I brought some citizens as well to ask the question, but would you mind explaining again the reasons for the draft EIS, or the phased EIS versus a full EIS, because I keep hearing that come up as an issue that people are having a problem with.
When the project was brought forward with the environmental checklist, I did a determination of significance because of the cumulative impacts that may happen for this project. As was pointed out, it says 16 times in the draft environmental impact statement that the action currently before the Planning Commission and the City Council does not have any impact, because changing the color of the map does not turn one shovel full of dirt out of the site. However, it will eventually lead to that. That led to my determination of significance. During the scoping process, we reviewed comments from that people made regarding that, looked at the WACs, RCWs, on the process for that, and it seemed most appropriate that since there was no impact at the moment, and rather than having everything in the world studied because we didn't know what was going to happen, to do the phased approach, which would allow the broad overview to be done, showing what the possibilities are, that there are wetlands on the site, there are steep slopes adjacent to the site. It is a frequently flooded area. There is shorelines, but that was taken out in the docking process, which outlined those items and then set the stage for further review of the impacts when an actual project was brought forward.
So does the phased EIS somehow create more leniency for a project, or
no? In fact, it does more, because if you go with the other way of that, there is no impact for changing the color on the map. You could easily have done a determination of non-significance and skip that whole process altogether. Okay. I felt it was more important to get that information out before the decision makers that these items existed out there and how they could be mitigated.
Okay, that's where I thought we ended up on my understanding, but I just wanted to make sure and share what I thought I knew with others who had an issue there. And then, Jeff, I didn't hear you say, though, did the changes to the comp plan need to be made, whether or not we go, you know, whatever the recommendation is?
Not all the changes. We did go through the limited open space section.
Okay.
I believe that they are still good changes, whether or not you approve the
design. Are some of the changes specific to this project?
What it does is the text changes and the policy changes allow for consistency in redesignating this property from limited open space to general commercial. The plan language then supports the decision to make the change.
Okay. All right, I think that's all for now. Thank you.
And I would like to clarify, I was not accusing anyone of evil. I was quoting a book, quoting the Bible, to avoid even the appearance of evil, and I did state that while I was not saying that there was improprieties, I said it opens the door for accusations of improprieties. And before the meeting even started, as far as this goes, I asked for clarification why we hadn't seen it. I just wanted to give an opportunity. Maybe something happened that I wasn't aware of. And quite frankly, I'm not opposed to changing the text. And if given the opportunity to spend time reviewing it, there was no opportunity to do so. It was felt like it was put in at the last minute. I don't think I will say right now for the record, I do not believe staff withheld this information to put in at the last minute. I do believe that it was something you saw that needed to be rectified, and unfortunately the timing worked the way it did. It still didn't feel right. And I just don't like it. I want to be able to review it, quite frankly, before I just jump on a decision in one night. And as far as the Minix and the Baptist Church is concerned, I don't know them, but I spent more time at a Baptist church than any other. I grew up a Baptist, so. Anyway, any further discussion, commissioners, or public hearing is still open. We can close it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a brief comment. I'd like to start, Mr. Sachs, by apologizing. I don't like to bump heads with staff or anyone else for that matter. My emotions got a little bit better of me, and they went out there looking terrible. I'm sorry about that. We've heard comments tonight that not upzoning this property is a takings. I've heard lots of talk over the years of takings by government, and have always been associated with downzoning or taking away rights from a property owner. This property was this way, and these property owners bought it, as far as I know. I believe I heard that earlier. We've not taken anything away from them. I have a hard time accepting the idea that to not act is in fact a de facto taking. Secondly, in case anyone hasn't figured out, I'll probably be voting against this, and I do so for the reasons that I elaborated on a few minutes ago. Thank you.
Thank you. Our public hearing is still open. I think unless anybody else has a further comment on this, I would entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Commissioner Christensen, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Well, we could have further discussion or have a motion.
If you have to make a motion.
Commissioner Demarest?
I'd like to recommend to the City Council that this commission recommend denial of CPA 2011-01. For reasons set forth in the discussion this evening, I believe that if, in fact, the comp plan amendment text is to be changed, that should be done under separate process and it should also start there. So again, I make a motion to deny CPA 2011-01.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Rodland. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Yeah, the three-way split. Kim, did you get the votes on that? Thank you. So that motion has died. You could have another motion and a vote. Anyone would like to make one?
Can we move to change the language, or are we limited to?
You could make a motion, I believe, for one of those options plus modifications, I believe. So if I'm understanding correctly, you were making a motion to select option B. Is that approval of CPA 2011-01 amending the comprehensive plan and use designation map as shown on attached?
I'm guessing that can be a split. So
land use?
That will go the same way as the last vote, I think. So.
Yes, I'm just curious. Are you trying to make a motion for that then?
Well, can we just change the language without...
Are you saying, I guess I don't understand what you're trying to propose.
Okay, we have some proposed text changes here.
You do?
That I understand should be done, whether or not we make a recommendation to approve or deny.
I see.
So I would like to see us at least change the language, even if we are stuck in a three to three.
Okay, so, sounds like you're making a motion to change just the land use text or the comprehensive plan amendment, not at this point changing the land use designation and zoning?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff, is that something that we are even allowed to do as far as break apart? Because I think it would probably have to go to council before it was officially modified.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see why the commission could not choose to modify option B and recommend approval of the text amendment without and taking no action or further action in the motion on the plan amendment. They are two separate products.
Okay.
So we can keep going with the other part of it later, but if other people are interested in correcting that language, I would like to accomplish something.
So it sounds like there's a motion on the floor by Commissioner Tuttle to modify the land use, the comprehensive plan land use element text changes that are highlighted in gray, that I believe we all have a copy of, and only that portion at this time. And that is your motion. Is there a second?
Second.
That is a motion by Commissioner Tuttle, second by Commissioner Christensen. Any further discussion? Commissioner Demers?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate Mr. Tuttle's desire to move forward with the language change. Most of us just saw this language over the weekend. Certainly the public saw it. No more further back than that. To me, if we're going to amend the land use and land element of the comprehensive plan, it should come back before us first in the form of a workshop before we act on it. There may be inaccuracies in it, and there may be other things that are not inaccuracies, but rather that are policy decisions that I believe deserve a fair shake in the public forum and a fair amount of time to discuss in amongst ourselves before we act on it. So I would be in denial of the motion for those reasons.
Mr. Sherwood.
If I understood Mr. Sachs correctly, there may be a bifurcation of language, some appropriate to the project and some not, more general in nature. Did I understand that correctly?
That's correct.
And for that reason, I don't think it would be appropriate to change the language if you can, because of that.
Okay, well, I'll jump in and say I'm not in favor of changing the language at this time. I don't know if we want to continue with the vote. And we do have a motion and a second. Unless we will take the vote unless you want to withdraw. You want to withdraw your motion?
Yeah.
Based on conversation, Commissioner Christensen?
Sure.
So we're going to withdraw that. Commissioners, we are, I believe that it didn't pass on this particular item. We could probably make motions all evening. And
Mr. Chair,
yes,
there is one other option for you to forward to council, and that's no recommendation.
Correct.
There is a timeline that the city council has established on this, and they are expecting decisions to be forwarded to them. And again, that would be an option.
Correct. Thank you, sir. And that was where I was heading, was just to send the...
I would make a motion that we send it to the city council with notice here.
There's a motion made by Commissioner Rodland, seconded by Commissioner Tuttle, that the Planning Commission make no recommendation on this particular item CPA 2011-01. Any further discussion on that motion and second, Commissioner Demers?
My only comment would be, and I would support the motion, but I would do so with the anticipation that would be conveyed to city council that the reason for it is that the commission was split, unable to come to any resolution of any sort with regard to the matters before us this evening.
Problems with that? Correct. I agree with that. Then any other further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Thank you, folks. Again, this is obviously going to city council, and we take it up there. Thank you. A couple of things I will need to make a motion to extend the meeting, and then I would like to take your success to that.
I'm hoping that we extend the meeting past 9 o'clock.
Motion made by Commissioner Christensen, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Discussion. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Let's take a 10-minute recess.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, I will call this planning commission back to order, I guess. All right, our next item on the agenda is, if I can find my agenda. I know it's first air.
No.
No?
No,
North Kelsey.
Oh, North Kelsey.
Oh, is it North Kelsey?
Yes, North Kelsey.
And the,
you want this?
Keep my hand in a minute. Thank you. CPA 2012B, North Kelsey and Downtown Plan Update. I believe the presenter is Manager Popelka, is that correct?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
North Kelsey Downtown, just to touch on what we've been doing. This amendment is all about uncoupling the North Kelsey plan and the downtown plan from the comprehensive plan. They're both adopted, fully adopted in that plan now. And our intent here is to uncouple or detach, but then retain or bring back goal and policy language that's appropriate for the comp plan. We talked about North Kelsey a good bit here, and we essentially took the goals from the North Kelsey Development Plan, turned those into policies for the comp plan to reinforce what was already in the comp plan about North Kelsey. With downtown, I think you're maybe seeing those for the first time. I had put together about a two-page compendium of policies and so forth from the downtown master plan as a starting point. Shared that with the Dream Board of Directors. There was some minimal impact back from that group. And that has been condensed down to one goal for downtown, specific to downtown. And a number of the policies and directions that are in the downtown master plan have been culled and pulled together into those six or seven policies falling under that downtown goal. Dream was most interested in recognizing two things, basically: making downtown a memorable experience by being clean and having a number of continuing program for events. They were really more concerned with charging or re-energizing downtown with a series of events, and that's reflected in one or more of those policies. But staff ended up taking combining several of those phrases from the plan into the policies that you have before you. So that and this will guide us as if we choose to, if we need to spend some time going back to revisit, perhaps update the design guidelines for either downtown or North Kelsey, this will provide a basis for that. At this point, we have no plan to dig into the design guidelines. That may be appropriate at some point as we move ahead. But it will nonetheless help inform the zoning code for that. Be happy to delve into more detail as you wish or take some questions.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions before we go to public testimony? Great. Then we'll open up the public testimony. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to make any comments to the Planning Commission regarding this comprehensive plan amendment? Seeing no takers, I would entertain a motion to close the public hearing portion, or excuse me, the public testimony portion of this public hearing.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Commissioner Christensen, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. commissioners, any discussion we want to take place, or should we, before we make a motion, of course, we'll close the public hearing. There is no one making comments on it.
I have no problem with what's before us this evening. I think that it's been well discussed in workshops. It reflects what's going on out there. Yes, it's a disappointment to see the North and Kelsey plan going away in the way that it was adopted. But at the same time, I certainly can appreciate and support the desire to do whatever we can to move that effort to the downtown area and make that area thrive. I know all of us know that's a huge challenge. It's got a state highway going through it. What else do we need to say? It's not like Snohomish. It's not like Snohomish. There's lots of work to be done. I don't think that things were done wrong in the past necessarily. I think they might have been done differently than what people want to do them now. That's not the issue here tonight. So that's all I have to say.
Great. If commissioners don't have any other comments, then I will entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
I move that we close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Yeah, and I don't have the recommendation. I don't need it, but Commissioner Christensen.
I'd like to make a recommendation that we forward this to the Monroe City Council to approve CPA 2012B amending the comprehensive plan land use element to uncouple the North Kelsey Development Plan and Downtown Master Plan from the comprehensive plan, and amending the comprehensive plan as shown in attachment one, and based on findings and conclusions attached.
Thank you, Commissioner. Motion made by Commissioner Christensen, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Great. Our final public hearing this evening is Comprehensive Plan Amendment CPA 2012-01, First Air Field Comprehensive Plan Amendment and Rezone. This is also by Manager
Popelka. Thank you. First Air, I should mention that.
My apologies, real quick, if I may. I believe Commissioner Christensen had stated an appearance of conflict of interest that he owns property nearby, and so he will, I believe,
I've also been told by the city council that I should.
All right, thank you. Kim, if you can make a note. Thank you.
Just a clarification for the record. Told by city council or by the council, city attorney?
City attorney. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a little else.
I'd point out that this is just for the comp plan amendment. The rezoning on this, which would be done to be consistent with the comp plan, should be approved. That is not on the table at this point. That will come at a later date, perhaps before council takes final action. It may not happen until after that, depending on what sort of things happen with the airport transaction that's in the works. So this is just for the comp plan. This is about 65 acres total. I think 27 acres is involved in changing existing zones of special regional use and a little bit of parks open space on the west and some residential, two residential lots to LOSA, which would bring all of the airport present and future operations into that LOSA zone, which does make a lot of sense. There are a lot of critical areas out there. This runway is planned to be extended to the west, but there's been another draft phase environmental impact statement done on this that talks about potential wetlands impacts. But this project is quite different from the other in terms of the much, much lower degree of potential impacts with this. So we spent quite a bit of time talking about zoning-related aspects of this, and part of it is a definition for LOSA, Limited Open Space Airport, that is not now in the comp plan at all. And we spent some time dealing with this definition, and actually I like the way this has come out. It sets the intent, it sets the general tone of protecting and preserving the airport as a viable, sustainable operating airport. And it also allows non-aviation uses that will directly and indirectly support the airport operations. So this was, I think, resulted, was it our last meeting or the meeting before? This has been brought forth through the changes as the commission agreed. And I think that's all I had for an introduction. I think we're all pretty familiar with this one.
We are. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Commissioners, any questions for staff? No? Great. I will open the public testimony portion of this here, and I do have one person on the list, and that is Mr. Michael Terry.
Well, I thank the Planning Commission for an opportunity to further discover what's going on.
Give us your name and address for the record, sir.
Yes, my name is Michael R. Terry, 13829 195th Drive, Southeast Monroe.
And do you promise the testimony you're about to give is the truth? If so, say I do.
I do, and I wish to give my prepared remarks to the Secretary.
Great.
I addressed the Commission a few days after arriving the infamous postcard. And that's in the record, I hope. I subsequently discovered what I think are errors in the Monroe Municipal Code safety overlay diagram. And so I approached the public hearing with my first impressions of that and had an opportunity to talk to the airport owner about those. And I came away from that conversation that he was very supportive of the fact that his definition of a runway was different than my definition of a runway and different from the FAA's Federal Aircraft Regulations definition of the end of the runway. Since the end of the runway is the reference point, the only reference point in the ground of the safety zones, not land use zoning, but safety zones. There are six of them. I live in one of them, as shown in the current municipal code. There are potentially, eight or nine current residents in the Rainier View Road area that fall in another zone, Zone 4. These zones are established based on aircraft accident data, and it's for the purpose of making aircraft operations safe and keeping the people on the ground safe. What I don't find in the prepared land use and so on of the Planning Commission is really any addressing of the people safe portion of the findings and conclusions. No adverse effect on public health, safety, and welfare. But there are errors in my judgment, and I'd like to call your attention to them. On page 16 of the land use, attachment 6, the tracking document, there should be some reference in an LOSA as to what classification of airport we are addressing at this point. Not to limit necessarily any future coming to the council with a new classification, but at least describing the classification that is desired at this time. Right now, the airport is a utility visual runway airport, which means no aircraft larger than 12,500 pounds and no landing speeds greater than 91 knots in a visual approach no instrument landing, no tower or whatever. So I recommend that page land use 16 include a designation of the airport as utility visual runway, and to remove the reference in another paragraph there, which is not numbered, to large aircraft. Large aircraft are not small aircraft by definition of the FAA and the Federal Aviation Regulations. So let's not confuse people that we are planning right now a large aircraft airport operation. On page land unit use 40, paragraph 10.2, I think should be 11.2, but that's a secretarial issue. I recommend that we retain the WSDOT Airports and Compatibility Land Use Guidebook M3074 of January 2011 as the guide for consultation procedures in bodies like this Planning Commission and the City Council for any future airport expansion. To not have a six-step recognized process leaves a lot of uncertainty and speculation. If the runway length defined by the FAR, it is going to be lengthened beyond the current runway length, then zone 4 should be corrected on the overlay to an extent from the end of the runway of 3,500 feet. Today it is extended beyond zone 1. Zone 3 vertex should be set back 1,000 feet from the end of the runway, a setback, not an extension, but a setback at the end of the runway. Zone 4 width should be 500 feet less than the runway protection zone for a single-sided traffic pattern as indicated in all the guidance that's available from California and Washington. With that, I want to thank for the opportunity to bring this up.
Thank you, sir. That is all I have on the list. Is there anyone else wishing to address the Planning Commission on this particular item? If not, I would entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of this hearing.
So moved.
Sir. Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Commissioners, any comments or questions at this time? Discussion?
Sure.
Thank you. Commissioner Pembers?
I would be interested in hearing staff's remarks or comments that you might have with regard to the testimony. One, with respect to the utility visual runway, as far as having a definition of the type of airport and whether that comes into play here. The large planes language has been in our comp plan. Any comments staff might have as to whether that should be looked at. And I think especially the comment that Mr. Terry raised with regard to the strikeout in LU 11.1 with regard to taking WSDOT reference out. So, there could be some feedback on that, it would be great.
I'll start off. Regarding the Washington DOT standards, most of what Mr. Terry talked about is, I believe, is more applicable to the zoning ordinance than the comprehensive plan. But those Washington state guidelines are, in fact, guidelines, not mandatory requirements, and the city has incorporated, I'll say, most of that in the designation of zones for the airport. The runway is an allowed use and is permitted in the park's open space zone. Whether extending that runway would change those zones, would perhaps extend them further out. By design, not by requirement, but by design, the city could choose to take action to to change that zone to reflect that. That again, that would be more related to the zoning ordinance. I'm not sure about the definition of the airport or the classification of the airport in the comp plan. I'm just not certain, because what I'm thinking is that what LOSA establishes is airport. It could be any number of types of airport. It's not specific to a certain single classification. I wonder if that would that clarify, or would it confuse, in a sense, what that means in the terms of the comp plan. The other sort of large planes, I'm not sure that large planes even is a descriptive element in place of the comp plan. That's getting into too much detail. Well, I think that's micromanagement. Although I'm not sure exactly how it's used in context. Just some quick reactions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. You mentioned whether open-air hangars for large planes belongs here, but really there's quite a bit of descriptive language in the future visions and issues. Talking about 8,000 square foot building or flight school facility. We've heard earlier this evening about the need to, when the opportunity presents itself, revisit, clarify, and improve upon the comp plan language. Is this one of those instances?
Could be. We did not make any effort anywhere nearly as deep an effort in updating for first air as we did for the East Monroe property. Since there was a direct conflict with East Monroe in terms of the vision statement. But that could be, you know, what I would suggest is that one possibility would be for the commission to recommend that language be updated. It would be brought to the council in the direct mode from here, since commission, if you take a look tonight, would not be considering comp plan amendment any longer, although zoning will be coming back, but you can certainly make that part of your recommendation without being specific about the language.
And the last follow-up, sure. If we don't have the reference to WASHDOT aviation airport land use compatibility guidelines, what is the best management practices? Is it that or is it something else?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm just asking what the best management practices are if we don't start at WASHDOT. Is there something else, or is it by default WASHDOT?
There may be other best practices. WASHDOT is, I say that their guidelines tailored from California guidelines, and there may be other sources as well. And I think best practices includes, if not explicitly, certainly includes Washington guidelines may be the defined best practice. I think it offers a little more flexibility or meet that requirement. What are the best practices without limiting it to Washington guidelines?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Commissioner Robin wants to...
I don't believe that the length of the runway or anything to do with the runway should be in our comprehensive plan, because the FAA is going to be control of that anyway. And I'm not sure what their very recommendation will be on this. But we have... For us to say how it's going to be done, I don't think it'll make a darn bit of difference with the FAA and how it's done. They have their own rules.
They're strict.
Thank you.
Commissioner Sherman, I appreciate the research that led to that testimony. Thank you. I agree that I don't know that it's appropriate to incorporate that here. I do have a question. Is the city's council... COUNSEL, given any input
as far as legal issues that we will face regarding the zoning and how that applies to displacement threshold and the zones that are on the map. Have we received any recommendations as far as the language that needs to go into the zoning code to ensure that we've covered liability issues?
We've not had any, legal counsel hasn't raised any issues with this project. And I believe, in fact, those guidelines could be undone. And the city would be within its rights, within our rights, to completely eliminate those zones since they are not mandated. They're an exercise of best practice suited to First Air. And any expansion of that would may trigger some thought in the zoning ordinance as to whether there should be changes to that ordinance that we just notified people about via the postcard that Mr. Terry was here to take a lot of calls about airport compatibility zone from property owners out there. But no, there hasn't been any concern that we're aware of about potential liability issues with those things. Since they are by choice.
Mr. Demers?
I don't want to belabor this, so some might say I tend to do that. I felt very comfortable with Dr. Havoc's testimony that he'd given over a period of meetings with regard as to what the airport runway would be, how usable it would be, what sort of airspace there was. I'm not a pilot, so I can't speak properly about this. But Mr. Terry sounds like he's done some very thorough research, as offered in his testimony. And quite frankly, I'm confused again on what this airport might support. And maybe that has no bearing on tonight's discussion. If it doesn't, then we move forward. If it does, then I guess I want more information.
I think this will need to come back around again when we deal with zoning and whether, I guess it wouldn't be directly related to zoning, but whether, say, extending the runway might trigger some need to take a look at Chapter 1860, the compatibility zone, and the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 zones that are constructed now. There's some confusion about exactly what those zones mean in terms of future expansion. But again, that's more, it's related to zoning. It is project specific, but any use at the airport, non-aviation or aviation use, or any expansion of the runway would be subject to the rules of that chapter of the zoning ordinance. So it may well trigger some consideration for clarifying, correcting. I spent some time with Mr. Terry. Apparently there are some questionable, there may be a couple of mistakes in how these were set up if we strictly follow the Washington guidelines. So maybe a means to make some corrections if they need to be made. But I think it's zoning, not company.
Great.
Thank you, and then I would jump in and say that I do appreciate the thoroughness of Mr. Terry's testimony. And yeah, so this is something that we would be dealing with more with the MMC in greater detail as far as the zoning goes, not part of necessarily the comprehensive plan amendment. And I have seen a hand from staff.
Two comments. One is that you're correct, and this is not a comprehensive plan related item, is because right now the current comprehensive plan use, land use designation and the zoning allows the airport runway to be expanded. So changing the comprehensive plan doesn't change whether or not the airport can be expanded, the runway itself, because that's an allowed use right now. And then the other one is that the guidelines specifically say that these are to be interpreted through the lens of the local airport operator and the situation of the city itself, which may expand or contract the zones themselves as local conditions dictate. So there is some flexibility in what's done.
All right, thank you. And if I had a thought, I've lost it. That's all right.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Commissioners, any other comments? Well, we are still in the public hearing, so I've wrapped up our conversation. I guess I would entertain a motion to close the public hearing portion of this meeting. Did we already do that? Did we close the public hearing?
No, just the public testimony.
Just the public testimony. Thank you.
I move to close the public hearing. I'll second.
Motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. So at this point, I think we're just looking for a motion for recommendation. Commissioner Demarest?
Before that, I just would like to make two comments. One, I think this development, or the definition for LOSA came a long ways from where we started. I certainly feel much better about it than I did early on. Paul, thank you for your efforts on that, whoever else was involved in it. Secondly, I also appreciate the separation of the uncoupling, perhaps, of the zoning aspect of this from this. Though I am a little confused because I've heard we can uncouple. It's got to be done at the same time, and yet we're uncoupling. Regardless, I appreciate that. I think it makes sense. So with that, I'd be happy to make a motion that we recommend the City Council that they approve CPA 2012-01, adding the LOSA definition of the comprehensive plan and amending the comprehensive plan land use designation map as shown on attachment 5 and based on the findings and conclusions attached.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Denver, seconded by Commissioner Rodman. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And now we can request that Commissioner Christensen come in. Rolling around out there?
I think my niece went home.
You're smart. Discussion by commissioners and staff. Manager Falk, anything?
Deer in the headlights. honestly, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head for a commission.
No. Thank you. Anyone else from staff have any comments? Thank you. Commissioner Christensen,
I'm
Commissioner Sherwood?
Okay.
Commissioner Demarest? Commissioner Robert?
Story about the airport. I came home from Oregon one time and it got a little dark. And I had a look, there was no lights in the room at that time. I had a buzz the house, and this is long back there, front porch, I'm going to try to rub it.
I have nothing.
I have a question. I didn't know we had planes before lights.
Huh?
I didn't know we had planes before lights.
I mean runway lights.
Runway lights.
Because they turn those on occasionally.
Yeah.
Well, then I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
One second.
Starting to wonder. A motion made by Commissioner Sherwood, seconded by Commissioner Christensen. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, staff. We'll get down here much earlier than I expected.